Good afternoon and welcome everyone to today's Brown Bag Forum webinar. Today we're delighted to be talking about the HICCUP Initiative, a new nonprofit initiative with a mission to preserve and restore health at the community level. And we're really excited to welcome Esther Dyson and Rick Brush, who are here to tell us more about this really exciting opportunity. And on the second half of today's session, we'll encourage you to share your ideas for Maine communities that are ready to invest in health. And if this is your first time joining one of our Learning Community webinars, I just want to give a really quick overview of the work we do here at Maine Quality Counts. We are a regional healthcare collaborative working to bring together the people who give care, get care, and pay for care to improve health quality. And we do this work to transform health and healthcare in Maine by leading, collaborating, and aligning our improvement efforts. And you may recognize us from one of the programs we have listed on the screen. To learn more about our work, I would encourage you to check out our website, mainequalitycounts.org, and as just a note, you'll be able to access the PowerPoint slides and a recording from today's session by visiting the Learning Community section, and I will have those materials posted there later this afternoon, and we'll also send out an email to folks who are on the webinar today. We offer a variety of complimentary monthly webinars on lots of different healthcare topics and would encourage you to join our mailing list or follow us on Facebook or Twitter for the latest announcements on upcoming webinars. So just a few quick webinar notes before we get started. All of the lines have been muted today to minimize some of the background noise, but with that said, we definitely want this to be an interactive and participatory session. So as we're going along, feel free to type your questions or comments into the chat box, or you can use the raise your hand button, and we can call on you to ask a question. So I'd like to introduce you now to today's speakers. We have Esther Dyson here with us. She's the founder of HICCUP and chairman of ED Venture Holdings. She's an active angel investor, a best-selling author, a board member, and an advisor concentrating on emerging markets and technologies in new space and health. We also have Rick Brush. He's the executive director of HICCUP and founder of Collective Health. He's a former corporate strategist in health and financial services, including nearly a decade at Cigna, and he's now focused on creating markets for health impact investing. So with that, I would now like to turn it over to Rick and Esther.
Good morning, everybody. Thank you for the nice introduction, and I'm really here to introduce Rick, who's going to be leading the webinar today. And We do welcome both your questions in the first part and especially your suggestions about communities that might be interested in working with HICCUP in the second part. And now I'm going to hand over to Rick.
Okay. Thank you, Kate, and thank you, Esther. And thanks. We've got a pretty good group and growing, it looks like, on the line here. Thanks for giving us your time. And as Esther said, please chime in. We're going to be looking for your questions all along the way. And what we wanted to do is give you an overview of HICCUP. It's a new initiative, as Kate said, and we'll take the form of a contest. And we'll talk more about the contest itself and what we're looking for. But first, maybe just a little bit of an intro as to why we thought HICCUP was necessary. And so taking a look at what the conventional wisdom tells us improves health, you know, most people would probably say access to high-quality, affordable health care. I know before I joined HICCUP and before I launched another venture, I was with a large insurance company for about 10 years. And it was pretty widely held throughout the insurance industry at that time and throughout most of the healthcare industry that access was key, and access to clinical care, medical care, and improving quality of medical care. And yet the research tells us that, medical care, clinical care, accounts for just about 10% of what matters to health over our lives. So the question then is, well, what else matters to health, and what can we do about it? And so those are questions that are fundamental to what we're doing with HICCUP. And when you look at what really matters to health, you see this really large constellation of factors. It's not just health care, which is important, both physical and mental health care and dental care. But it's also our behavior and what influences our behavior and our community condition. So you can go pretty far out into the broader social, cultural, and economic conditions, and you can draw lines back to what matters to our health most in terms of both the choices that we have and the choices that we make. And so taking a little closer look at what some of the big drivers of health are, well, we know education matters to health. In fact, college graduates live a lot longer than those who don't graduate high school. In fact, there's really good new data on this from Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. We know that relationships, my social support network, my family, my friends, those that I can count on, matters so much to health that, in fact, it matters more than the risk factors that we're all so familiar with, like obesity. And yet, we don't traditionally think about our relationships as important to health. And we know that community factors in general, including the built environment and our neighborhoods and whether we have access to healthy foods and whether we have safe places to exercise and play, all of these things matter significantly to health, and the Trust for America's Health looked at those factors and the potential investments in those factors and found that it would actually significantly reduce a lot of the chronic illnesses that we're now treating in emergency rooms and hospitals, and in fact would return a pretty good ROI. So really, there's this broad constellation of factors, and it can be overwhelming. And one of the jobs of HCCP is to identify, well, what among those factors would create the greatest improvement in health and do it in a cost-effective way and potentially, over the long term, maybe return financially as well and reduced healthcare costs and then higher productivity and other value of health overall. And so if you happen to have $3 trillion, like the U.S. spends every year on healthcare, and you were deciding where to invest that $3 trillion, well, you might look at these broader factors, or you might look at the medical care system. And, in fact, where we spend our money typically in this country is on downstream treatment of illness, or the medical care system, broadly defined the healthcare system, and yet spend very, very little, maybe 3% or even less, on prevention, population-based health strategies, public health strategies. And, in fact, these are approaches that could reduce our need for downstream health care in the first place. And so as a result of that $3 trillion annual investment, our health outcomes aren't as good as they could be. And, in fact, they're worse, in some cases far worse, than other countries. We do much better at late-stage interventions. We do better at cancer and other acute illnesses. But generally speaking, our infant mortality, life expectancy, and chronic conditions like diabetes and obesity are worse than other countries that actually spend far less than we do on healthcare. So if we were to take a new look at health and look at it from the standpoint of an investor. And Esther's an investor. Esther's been an investor in technology for some time and in health for the last decade or more. And investors look very differently at challenges and opportunities than we've been looking at our healthcare system. So what HCCP is attempting to do is really take that investor approach in looking at health. And if we were to look at health through an investor lens, we might start with the data and what the data tells us and what really matters to health. So what are those factors that we know would make the biggest difference on a population basis in improving our overall health and avoiding or reducing the chronic conditions that we face? And we'd probably look beyond traditional healthcare data. We'd look at really big integrated data, including self-collected, user-generated data. We'd look at financial data. We'd look at community demographic data. And we'd start to get a different picture of what really matters to health.
And we'd also look further back at what causes bad health as well as what cures it.
Good.
Which is fundamental here.
Sorry. No, please. And so we'd probably then have a much larger portfolio of potential interventions, ways that we could influence the health of the population that include medical care, but maybe go way beyond medical care and maybe lean toward prevention. And so an investor would ask, well, how do we maximize that impact? Where would I put my money if I wanted to get the greatest overall impact on health and maybe see a financial return as well? And then we'd look at, well, who are the leaders that can successfully bring together the collectives that are necessary to improve health at a community level And who can keep those leaders together? Who can sustain them? And we know that the success of community health efforts is often tied, always tied, to the quality of the leadership and the ability of the leadership to drive collaboration, to keep people together, to have, you know, shared goals and vision, and to be really thoughtful and strategic about how the community's dollars are spent in improving health. We were just in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, and we were visiting a community that's interested in HICCP, and it was really clear that the team that came together, which was about, I don't know, 15 to 20 people, as Esther said, they really liked each other. They've been through a decade or more of working together on moving population health in Lancaster, and they're still together. And when money comes in, when they're successful in getting a grant, they decide among them which organization is best positioned to take that grant and use those dollars and invest them back in the community. So that's the kind of leadership that we think would be most successful in driving a long-term community health improvement initiative. And so finally, we'd look at how do we raise the investment dollars that are required to improve health over the long haul? And then are there ways to maybe generate short-term payback on our initial investments? And can we reinvest those dollars in bigger and longer-term health improvement initiatives? And a quick example would be there's a project happening right now in Fresno, California, focused on childhood asthma. And we know that for severe cases of childhood asthma, and especially kids of low-income families whose housing quality might be substandard, there's a pretty good chance that if their asthma is not very well controlled, then there are home-based triggers at work here. It could be mold, it could be pests in the home, it could be cigarette smoke. But there's more than just lack of medication compliance that's driving kids into the emergency room and into the hospital at a much higher rate than they should be. And so there's things that we can do about that. And those things aren't typically done within the healthcare system, although we're starting to see healthcare patient navigators and other roles that are emerging that reach out to individuals, not just in the clinical care setting, but at their homes and in their communities. And so there's things that we could do with children in their homes in terms of education and looking at potential triggers in the home, and we can reduce those triggers. We can actually provide vacuum cleaners with HEPA filters. We can provide air filters for the we can provide air conditioners. We can provide, you know, pest management. We can, you know, provide green cleaning products so that, you know, harsh chemicals aren't being used. And we know from the evidence that when we do that, we can dramatically bring down healthcare emergencies. In fact, maybe as much as cutting hospitalizations in half, maybe more than that. And so one example would be if we can do that, and we know that it takes a really small investment to support children in this situation, and we know that we'd gain a lot more in terms of better health outcomes and potentially financial outcomes. We might be able to then leverage those savings or those avoided healthcare costs and reinvest them in longer-term initiatives, for example, to address community conditions that lead to obesity. So that is the thinking behind HICCP. And what HICCP is looking at is not just asthma or diabetes, but really a whole portfolio of interventions at the community level that work together, that are integrated with the idea that 1 + 1 = 3, and that if we do these things in a coordinated way, that we'll get a much greater impact than if each of the individual programs go at it alone. And so HICCP is hosting a competition, a national competition in 2014. We've been talking informally with communities now for the last few months. We're learning a lot. We've talked to some folks in Maine, and we're really interested in your ideas about communities that might be interested in this kind of an approach. And ultimately, we will end up with a more formalized selection process over the next few months. And we'll identify 5 communities that are really interested in collaborating with us over the next 5 years. And we'll roll up our sleeves together, and we'll bring additional partners and collaborators to the table. And we'll make a significant difference together in improving health for all those who reside in the community, and really creating a healthier health system so that future generations grow up in a healthier environment and avoid a lot of the illness and chronic conditions that we see today. And so officially, we're looking then for five communities to collaborate with us over this five-year period. There'll be a prize at the end. It'll be the Hiccup Prize, and it'll be for the greatest improvement in health overall in the community, and doing it in a cost-effective way and measuring financial impacts as well. And then there'll be a much greater number of learning communities that that we share information with along the way. And while it's a competition and while there will be a winner at the end of the competition, there'll be lots of incentives and promotion along the way so that we're building excitement and accelerating the potential plans and results within those communities. And there'll be good mechanisms or ways of sharing between those communities so that we're collaborating with the idea that collaboration and competition together will produce better results across all five. And so Hiccup will help. We're building now a network of partners that are really smart about data and what data we should be collecting and how we can do that, and ways to aggregate data and make sense of data to drive better decision-making by communities. We're bringing together partners that have solutions or ideas or offers of help, everyone from large food companies that might be willing to test healthy menus within communities, as Esther calls them, demilitarized zones, and testing healthy menus and driving new sources of revenue with different menu choices, as well as apps and health program leaders. But the main idea here is that this is all in support of local leaders who are already demonstrating really good success, who have been effective at bringing together collectives and are looking for additional support to go farther. And then finally, we're bringing together partners to look at how would you structure a series of funding and financing and other investment-type support to drive this much larger health effort than communities typically coordinate. What we're finding in our conversations with communities is that they've been very successful at getting grants, community transformation grants, grants from local foundations, but it's really hard to sustain the kind of financial support that you need to drive longer-term results. So what they see is sort of sporadic improvement. You know, you drive really good results and you decrease smoking rates, which they did in Lancaster, and then money might run out for a while and you might see a little bit of a lag in terms of your progress from there. So the idea behind Hiccup is to create this portfolio of funding and investment-based solutions that communities will need to put plans behind. So if communities can successfully create plans that are compelling enough, that demonstrate outcomes on the health side as well as potentially on the financial side, then we think we can bring not only funders and traditional philanthropies that support community health improvement, but also investors, impact investors and others who are looking to have both a social impact as well as a financial impact with the dollars they invest. So what are we looking for? And Esther, let me pause here and just ask, do you want to sort of highlight in your words what is most important in terms of what we're looking for in the community side?
Well, fundamentally, the overall purpose of Hiccup is to create data and evidence and inspiration. And so the contest is a mechanism for people to succeed. We're not trying to winnow out people. What we're trying to do is encourage five communities to get excited and to compete vigorously, but collaboratively with the other communities in achieving health goals. So we're not going out and evangelizing, you should really do this. We're looking for people who already want to do it and would love the kind of help that Rick has described and we can describe further. So we're trying to stack the deck. We're looking for people who are trying to succeed, just want more resources, more encouragement, more knowledge. They want contacts with funders, whether investors or foundations. They want a way to reach food companies and other large organizations, insurance companies, whatever. And they have some internal capacity already. They're already doing something. Maybe they've got a grant from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation or from the CDC or from some other local place, but they want to take this further. So we're looking for places that already have a committed group of some kind or other of different entities, employers, city government, health system, school board, local charities that are capable of coming together and actually agreeing on applying to compete. So it's kind of this ineffable human capital in addition to the criteria of population size, which is smallish, so that the total resources aren't too large, but also because we think that kind of small community is more likely to be working together. They need to be somewhat remote because that's going to bring better data. And we'd love to hear from you guys, both your questions and also, do you know such a community? And now we're just looking at your questions online.
And so Carol Kelligan is asking how we're defining community, and we really are looking at geography. We're looking at not subpopulations, but rather the entire population within a geography.
Yeah, and definitely not just online. It's something where we actually change, or the community is committing to change its built environment. It's getting its local retailers and food companies and restaurants to participate. So it's got to be geographically coherent.
And just to clarify, what does self-contained mean?
It means it's not a suburb of somewhere else, basically. It's people who live there, work there, play there, sleep there, eat there. It's not a prison, but it's pretty self-contained. So that the data about the community isn't going to include data about lots of people who come in and out. And so that if we change the built environment, everybody in the community is going to be affected one way or another. We are very much not, if people would just have self-control, they could be healthy. We really do think, as Rick says, the choices people make are shaped by the choices they have.
And so there are some more questions coming in. So question around Healthy Maine partnerships. And yes, we have heard about Healthy Maine partnerships, and we think there's a great opportunity there. In fact, we've had some conversation in Maine about that. And, you know, again, we're looking for leaders and collaboratives and coalitions that are already in place. We don't want to build that infrastructure because we think that, first of all, that takes a long time. But we think that communities that already have, you know, a working stewardship group or a backbone organization or whatever term you use are already well positioned to make really good progress. In fact, we're making good progress, and that what they really need is additional support. And so we've spent some time with communities and others who have been doing this sort of work in supporting communities to understand, well, where the breakdowns typically happen. You know, where are the areas where communities get stuck or stalled, and what can we bring to the table that would provide additional support? I don't know if it's a perfect analogy, but I think about it a little bit like a startup business that has made that has a great idea and that has a great leadership team. Maybe not a complete leadership team, but at least the founding leaders behind it. And there might be some missing pieces in terms of fully realizing the potential of that idea. And so Hiccup, in a way, we're looking for community startups that have made great progress and where we can bring additional support and resources and partners and potentially interesting ways of financing scale-up and spread of good local community initiatives that will take those efforts farther than they've been able to do so far. And so just to sort of give you the whole picture, I think we hit on most of this, but what we're offering is, first of all, the contest. This five-year contest, I'll talk about the timeline in a minute, but really what the contest means is that we'll be collaborating in a very intensive way over 5 years, and among the five communities, there'll be really intensive sharing and support over those 5 years as well. And there'll be promotion, and there'll be greater visibility, most likely, than these communities have been able to achieve on their own. And that might bring additional interest and support, as well as, and we've heard this from lots of communities, being a rallying cry within those communities. So bringing additional stakeholders to the table who have not been so actively supporting to date. And there'll be incentives. So it's not just one winner takes all at the end, but rather, what's the first community to hit a milestone like, you know, a comprehensive set of baseline data that goes beyond traditional healthcare metrics and looks at, you know, other metrics that we'll talk about in a minute, but that can help illuminate opportunities in the community in ways that haven't been seen before. And so the contest, we think, will have value on its own. And then HCCUP will bring to the table coaches or coordinators who will really be at the service of the local leadership teams and will challenge as well as support those local leadership teams and be a liaison with the partners that we bring to the table. And again, the partners that we're talking with are solution providers, maybe in traditional sense of health, but in also non-traditional sense of health, like food companies. We're talking with large insurers, we're talking with health systems, we're talking with organizations that we think can provide support to local efforts that may have been missing one or two ingredients or could really use additional support to push things further. And then on the financial side, in fact, we were almost late to the webinar because we've been meeting with investor types that are familiar with structured investments in businesses and companies and are intrigued by the idea of bringing this kind of approach to improvement as well. And so together over the next 6 months and then when we end up with our five communities, we think that we can bring some creative resources to the table that can maybe direct new sources of capital into community health improvement. And so from a measure standpoint, and there are a few questions on here about measures, and, you know, we want to rely on the experts here. So we are starting to engage organizations that will help us formalize our evaluation methodology, groups that have been doing quality measures and health measures for far longer than we have. And we want to bring to it as well, though, a lens of investability. So not only are we looking at the potential for baseline measures around health, but what are the opportunities in terms of a financial impact, not just healthcare cost savings, but maybe economic impact on the overall community. And again, in our visits with communities, that has a lot of interest. The mayor, the head of the economic development, you know, the business councils are very interested in the potential of creating healthier communities from the standpoint of a robust economy and, you know, bringing additional businesses into the community and supporting healthy environments for employees as well. And so this is a provisional list of metrics with not a whole lot of detail underneath it, but we think health impact, financial impact, then some measures around the community itself, the community context, the conditions that matter to health, the environment, and fourth, sustainability. How well will these community coalitions be able to continue the work beyond the 5 years? Because that's the intention, is that 5 years is really a starting point. And then finally, we've gotten some feedback from communities that it might be worthwhile considering a wild card, so that what matters most within those communities, we establish with those sites, baseline measures around something that they think from their data, from their work, is really important to improving health over the long haul.
So, for an example, they might want to do something around hours of sleep and start enforcing their noise abatement laws, or it might be something that we just don't cover in the basics, like dental health or homelessness, but it's something where the community feels this is really important to us, even though it's not one of the four, one of the five basic measures. And to be candid, we're not sure yet how that fits into the evaluation, but we think it's really important to make as much of this as possible community-based, not simply someone from outside imposing their ideas of what a community might want.
And so, again, probably on metrics, we'd probably be more interested in your input in terms of what would be important metrics rather than telling you our detailed provisional list. But we think having, you know, some consistency as well as some customization is important, and we think, you know, keeping it relatively simple and achievable is important. And then finally, we really want to be sure to tie in financial impact so that we can begin to look at health value and even return on investment, either in, you know, strictly financial or maybe financial and non-financial terms. So somebody said that Maine has very few communities of 100,000, and I think what you mean is that they're typically smaller than that, and that's good. We think 100,000 might be the max, and that, in fact, we've been talking with communities that are far smaller, and there are trade-offs, I think, in either direction. You can maybe lose influence and large players and critical mass if you go too small, but if you go too large, I think you lose the opportunity to, you know, shift policy and environments in the ways that we're thinking we can do over the next 5 years within these communities. So just quickly looking at a timeline. So we're launching this year. In the next couple of months, you'll hear about a formal selection process, and that'll be on our website, which really has not been changed over the last 6 months. It's sort of a placeholder for what we intend to launch in the next couple of months. And this is a national competition to draw communities that are raising their hands. And we've had actually a lot of communities, even before we've started, raise their hand. Maybe as many as 50 or so. And it's been incredibly helpful, and we've had lots of mutual focus groups getting together with communities and learning about them and refining what it is that we think we can do of unique value. And so I think we're getting closer to knowing exactly how we want to launch, and you'll hear more about it on the website in the next couple of months. Our goal, though, is that by mid-year we're in a position to select the final five communities and bring them together. One of the ways we likely will come together is through an in-person meeting, maybe over a couple of days or a few days, where communities get to meet each other. We start establishing ways to collaborate across and among those five communities. And we bring the partner network, and we hear much more about the communities and what their needs are and develop ways that we can provide support. But then ultimately it's this five-year contest where we're establishing some baselines maybe by the end of this year, and then over the next 5 years measuring improvements. And after the contest, this is all about studying what works, learning not in a lab or in academic research, but in real-life communities that are willing to work with us and make changes and pivots and learn as we go, and to test hypotheses, and then ultimately to generate enough data and evidence to see if we can add to this body of research around what it is that drives long-term, widespread, sustainable community health improvement, and doing it in ways that haven't been done before, especially on the financing side.
And then actually driving that.
And spreading it widely.
Yes, exactly.
And so just to get done with the slides and get to the questions, we wanted to open it up and hear from you about opportunities in Maine. There might be people who are outside of Maine or have ideas outside of Maine, but we want your feedback. We're still at a point where we're shaping things over the next couple of months, and so your reaction and your suggestions and your questions and ideas are really helpful.
Especially some places we've heard of in Maine are Madawaska and Eastport, and my sister, the nurse, lives in Pownall. And I don't know exactly what the protocol is here, but we're happy to answer voice questions as well as typed in ones, because we're trying to read at the same time as we're talking.
So Michelle Mitchell says, what's the difference between this contest and a grant? Yeah, it's a huge difference. Well, I'll start and then you ask your answer. So this is much more of a collaboration and hands-on. We're not a fund. We're not simply looking for communities that have good plans and are looking for a check. We're looking for communities that are interested in a much more creative, emergent process in working with us and refining plans and, testing new ideas and, bringing in additional partners than they might have conceived of initially. Because we think that if the community simply stay within their confines and keep doing things the way they're doing and are simply looking for more money to fund it, then we're not going to make a big contribution and we're not going to change things radically. And we really want to change things radically. So we think that that collaborative process is a big difference. And really, the money will come from the plans and the revised plans and the initial results that are achieved. So it's really based on impact and outcomes much more than it is on the initial idea.
Yeah, I mean, the fundamental answer also is, obviously, there will be grants as well as investments involved in each community. And because they will need those to make the kinds of changes that will win the prize. The prize itself, honestly, is not that big of an incentive. I think the real incentive is the changes you can make in your own community. But having a prize kind of gives it energy. It helps it get visibility because we want these communities to be proud and recognized, not just among themselves, but more broadly. And so in a sense, traditionally, prizes are offered to generate, to encourage lots of activity that's worth more than the value of the prize, because each contestant thinks, well, if I win the whole prize, I'll get something of great value. But the overall investment that goes into this project is going to be much larger than the prize, and some of that investment will come in the form of grants and some in the form of social impact and some in the form of individuals in each community doing things. So it's really a combination of the two, but the thing HICCUP controls is the prize. The thing the communities control is basically getting the grants and using them in order to win the prize. I hope that's clear.
So Barbara Crowley has a question or maybe a point to make about Maine and the socioeconomically varied communities that are insured not just by commercial insurance but by Medicare and Medicaid and uninsured. And I think that's actually that could be a challenge, but also it's very interesting in terms of the possibilities. And I'll go back to this example with childhood asthma. There's actually a project underway in Fresno, California, related to asthma, and it's focused on children who are covered by Medicaid or Medi-Cal in California. And so there's a new movement around the potential of using something called a social impact bond, in which investors put up the upfront money to pay for a health initiative like an asthma program, and that governments might be payers of outcomes, so that if success can be measured in terms of health improvement and reducing healthcare costs, then California State Medi-Cal program, might repay those investors or would repay those investors per a contract. So So I think that there's a lot of there's a lot of new possibilities that come around when you look at governments not as traditional funders or providers of grants, but rather as paid for success.
Get governments to invest as well in prevention, not simply in continuing care.
And maybe to do it in ways that doesn't, you know, strain current budgets, but only pays out based on outcomes. So anyway, I think, you know, diversity in payers might be a good thing. On the other hand, if there's one dominant payer, that might be easier because one dominant payer might see the benefits. And
yeah, the HICCP's full name is Health Initiative Coordinating Council, and it's clear there's a huge amount of coordination that's going to be necessary. And some of it is in the community. Part of the idea of our coaches is for there to be someone from outside who's not trying to get the mayor's job and who's, you know, not, who doesn't have, like, local interests, is just interested in the overall success, who can help bring some of the different stakeholders to the table and perhaps deal with the inevitable things that happen, like the mayor, there's a new mayor, the old one disappears, and the new one has the choice of either supporting what the old mayor did or making a new mark and trying to get HICCP to be part of the continuity there. That we recognize that communities are complex living organisms.
And Dr. Crowley, who asked the question, actually has her hand raised, so if you'd like to just press the *7 to unmute your line.
So I have. This is Barbara Crowley, and thank you. I appreciate the presentation. And I totally agree with the last comment you made that we will need some outside help because as some of us have been trying to work with different community collaborators, there's always an issue around turf and opportunity. And so even though all the players at the table want to do this, they have boards and other people that are that they have to respond to, and so sometimes to have an outside presence helping us sort of think through how do we get to the ultimate result that we want to get to when you're talking about health and the much larger perspective that you're talking about. But I think it's pretty exciting what you're suggesting, and I think there are multiple places in Maine that might be candidates for this. I happen to be in Augusta, but there are multiple opportunities.
Do you want to tell us?
Well, first of all, because I think there's a number of places trying to think about how do you become an accountable care organization, and I'm one of those places, but there are multiple, both in just large primary care groups as well as health systems. But as you think about how are you going to be accountable, therefore how are you going to improve the overall utilization experience of health, you've got to go well beyond the clinical bounds. So most of us are beginning to reach out in the communities and try to think about housing, transportation, other people that could help us with looking in, you know, going to homes and trying to help schools. Waterville has a whole initiative right now on how do I work with the children of Waterville so that we have individuals in third grade. More than 50% are at third grade reading, you know, and that takes a whole community effort. And the mayor of Waterville has begun that, including all the different sectors. And I think we can probably find examples of those across Maine, whether you talk about, and when you begin to talk about, we could do it around, potentially around things like asthma or some aspect, I would say I'm a little more interested in thinking about affecting whole populations and not necessarily single symptoms. I'm sort of in a place where I think we need to move beyond just disease-specific goals and think more about segmenting populations and understanding what the different segments in the population need and figure out ways that we can try to meet those. But I think the initiative that you're talking about is terrific. So.
Thank you. I don't know. Do you have our email address? Because we'd love to follow up.
I'm sure that Kay can probably help.
Yeah,
yeah,
and
okay,
I can definitely
great.
Post
yeah,
all the
I'll
information
hear it
on the website.
Sure.
I got it. I got it now.
Great.
Okay, thanks so much. So I hit *7 to unmute. What do I do?
I just hit *6.
Thanks so much.
Yeah,
thank you, Barbara.
Yeah.
Hi, this is Lisa Laterna with Maine Quality Counts. Thank you so much, Esther and Rick, for this opportunity and for sharing this with us. I also wanted, I know Ann Weiss from Robert Wood Johnson Foundation is on the phone, and I wanted to thank Ann for first introducing us to the HCCP initiative and to Esther specifically. And Ann, I don't know if you would make a couple of comments about just sort of the connection of this work between what we've been doing in Aligning Forces and where RWJ is going in the years ahead.
Hi, guys. Thank you so much, Lisa. I just dropped by this webinar kind of spontaneously because at the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, we are very interested in what HCCP is doing and have been following along. You know, a couple of weeks ago, we released the most recent recommendations from our commission to build a healthier America. And they talked about the importance of creating communities that foster health-promoting behaviors and broadening healthcare to promote health outside the medical system and investing in young children as the foundation of lifelong physical and mental health for our community. So definitely this emphasis is so important. A lot of the themes that HCCP is highlighting and emphasizing, we have emphasized so much in initiatives like that have been live in Maine, like the County Health Rankings and Roadmaps or Aligning Forces for Quality, all of them featuring the importance of community, of collaboration, of looking at financing and investment. And so I think that this initiative is a huge step forward, and I'm going to be very excited to follow along. Thanks for saying hello, Lisa.
And thank you, Anne. It's worth noting that it was at your invitation that I was at the Aligning Forces for Quality meeting back in, I think, November, December, and first met Frank Bragg and various other people from Maine. So it's really because of you that we're having this webinar in the first place. So thank you.
Great. Well, this is Lisa. Thank you both. And I'll open it back up to others on the call who might have questions.
Absolutely, and we have had a few more questions come into the chat box.
Okay.
One is asking a comment saying that Maine has the oldest population by median age in the country and the third lowest number of working age adults, so we are ahead of the country in terms of needing to try new ways to improve supports and care for our elderly. We're also a very rural state. Andy Gerstenberger asks, would you consider a focus on improving the health of elderly Mainers, but then also measuring impacts on their caregivers and communities?
That's sort of a tough one. I mean, we're focused on the results, and so if a community felt that it could win on these metrics by focusing on the elderly, that would be great. And if, you know, we're looking for some diversity among the communities and among the challenges they face. Again, it's really more up to the community to decide what's the best way of achieving real improvement in the five metrics. And given, you know, if you're a community with lots of elder people, then chances are that focus will simply present itself. So we're kind of neutral on that.
Okay. Great. Thank you. Another question that just came in is asking if you could please talk more about your vision of working with the determinants of health that you talked about earlier on in the presentation, such as working with schools, employers, municipalities, and just noting that it's really going to be truly a collaborative effort.
Well, yes, it's going to be truly collaborative. I'm going to the Food Focus Conference next week. I don't know if any of you on the line know about that. It's focused on school lunches. It's in Oakland, California. And 3 weeks ago, I was at Transportation Camp, which is focused on local transit services. So I'll tell you, personally, when I started this, I was focused on, I thought I was making a big leap by focusing on health, not health care. And now I'm really realizing that there's a further leap, which is to focus on almost economic and social health, not just physical health, because they're all interrelated. And in each community, there's so many people, and sometimes there's a lot of redundant efforts where, because not-for-profits don't have the same kind of incentives to come together and to scale. So getting all these disparate factors and organizations to work together is really part of it. And that's what, partly we're looking for places that are already doing that, and partly, of course, we want to help them do it even better.
Okay, excellent. Thank you. Many people have been typing in, giving us suggestions of communities, and I'm just kind of curious, could you talk a little bit about the process for applying to the HICCUP? If a community is interested or...
Sure. Well, for now, feel free to reach out to me, and my email's on there. We do want to know about communities that are raising their hand, and we're having lots of calls, and we're, you know, going and visiting sometimes too. And I'd love to have an occasion to go up to Maine, where my sister and mother live. So that's great. But formally, we think in the next couple of months we'll launch the selection process, and we're going to do that through the website. But we're also engaging we'll engage a partner so that it's truly an unbiased process based on, you know, what are the critical success factors, right? And so we're sort of finalizing, you know, who's going to help us with that selection process. And we think that, you know, in fairness, we want to give communities, we want to make it easy. We want to make the initial round really easy so that if there's easy qualifiers or disqualifiers, we don't waste anybody's time. But then it gets much more high touch, and, you know, we expect to have in-person visits in communities. So all of that will take some time, and it'll take some time for the communities to maybe have an iterative process of working with us through that selection process. So maybe by summer, so let's say we launch in 2 months, maybe sooner if we can. Realistically, then we're talking about maybe the beginning of the summer that that we're, you know, finalizing, you know, the round of maybe 10 or so that will become the 5 that we work with. Anyway, that's a long way of saying stay tuned, watch the website, and until that launches, feel free to reach out to me.
Okay, and great.
It may be worth adding one more thing. If it's 4 or if it's 6, you know, we're trying to find a field of communities that we think will be successful, and then the contest will pick the most successful. But we're not going to look hard for number 5 if there are 4 that we think are great and then there's one that we just don't think is going to make it. On the other hand, if there's a number 5 and a number 6 and they both look really great, then we would bring them in. Our capacity is limited, so we're not going to be doing 10. But again, our goal really is the success of the individual communities, not the ranking as much. So we're really focused on trying to find who's going to be great at this and then give them everything they can, everything we can to help them succeed.
Great, thank you. Another question that goes in along that line is, when a participant is asking if, you know, as you're going along and you select a project, is there going to be a mechanism that you share the ideas of the projects with the greater community, like a way for reporting out what other projects have been doing? How will that work?
One of the conditions of joining is that you share your data, obviously not individual personal data. But the whole point of this, people come sometimes and say, you know, our community is 500,000 people, and I say, well, you're welcome to steal all our ideas. Please do. We just, as HICCUP, we can't take on something that large, but the whole goal of this is for, over time, other communities to say, wow, if those people could do it, we could too. And somebody can go to the mayor and say, look what happened in this hiccup community, we could emulate some of that by doing this, that, or the other. And so there's no point from our point of view in anybody doing this if they're not willing to share their data and help others copy them.
Okay, absolutely. Thank you.
And we'll be working with, ideally in each place, the local community college or somebody like that, with statistics, students, and people really doubling down on effective and valid data collection and analysis.
That's excellent. Great. Thank you. I'd like to. Is anybody else on the line? If you have any questions, feel free to use the raise your hand button, and we can call on you, or feel free to chime in.
There's a question online from, looks like, Chris Johnson around communities have lots of good ideas and are making good progress, and they've got programs in place. And then I think the question is around, but there might, and there may be ideas they've never thought of before. And there may be ways of maybe stimulating new thinking in communities. And that's very much what we're interested in. In fact, that's the fun part. What's been really fun in these community meetings is when we stop presenting and we roll up our sleeves and we start imagining what exists locally, and we see, new ways of getting the schools on board, getting the local businesses on board, getting, the health insurer on board. And so in leaving the communities, we're often told, just sort of being there and having, a meeting for this purpose, brings people together in ways that they don't traditionally get a chance to because they're all so busy executing on what's already been decided. So I think that a big part of what we want to do is that stimulate that new creativity and new ideas and, maybe bring some thinkers that haven't traditionally been part of the health or healthcare sector before but might have different ways of looking.
So I think our time is almost up.
We've got 2 minutes to go. So I think maybe it's probably best if we wrap it out now. Everyone can have a few more minutes before heading back to lunch. But just want to thank you both. Thank you so much, Rick and Esther, for joining us today. This is really exciting to learn about hiccup, and we look forward to learning more. And just so everyone knows, I will have more information posted on your website if you want to reach out and, perhaps nominate one of your communities as well. So thank you both so much again for joining. I just want to let everyone know we do have a few more webinars coming up this month for the learning community. We have a provider lunch and learn happening next week, and then we're launching our new Transforming Health series to align with our annual conference, QC 2014 registrations will be on our website posted in February, so stay tuned for more details on that. So thank you all.
Thank you. And just one thing.
Absolutely.
I see Susan Burden as a speaker. I went out to meet her in the Beach Cities Health District. She is awesome. And so, to be candid, it's people like that, in addition to all the systems and prizes and ideas, that really make things happen. So from Rick and me, thank you all very much.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Have a wonderful
weekend.
Thank
you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That is so great.
Thank you. Please stand by.